Today we welcome Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed, author of the wonderfully compelling The Lebs and The Tribe, which won a Sydney Morning Herald Award in 2015 for Best Young Novelist. He is also director of a sweatshop, a Western Sydney literacy movement devoted to empowering groups and individuals from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds through creative writing initiatives. I'm your host, Danny V.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to speak to you after reading The Lebs, which is an extremely confronting book to read, but so interesting. I'd really like to talk about your original manuscript for The Lebs and how this formed your PhD thesis.
Well, thanks. I'm really flattered that you want to start there, because a lot of people just want to jump straight into the book and attack me or talk about my personal life. But I think if we actually start from the point where this was a doctoral thesis or part of a doctoral thesis, and then actually try to construct the discussion about some of the confronting subject matter in the book through an intellectual lens, it will actually help us push past the offensiveness and be able to have a critical discussion about race, class, gender, and sexuality in Australia today.
Perfect. So, that's exactly where I wanted to take it.
Right. So to answer the question, I started my PhD in 2013. My doctoral supervisors were Professor Ivor Indyk, Professor Chris Andrews, and Professor Greg Noble, who were from Western Sydney University. And I did a creative thesis. So it was broken up into two components. The first would be a novel, which would be a creative work. And then the second would be a dissertation or an exegesis, which is about 50,000 words, looking at some of the influences that helped me develop the kind of writing I wanted to produce. And then also looking at the broader politics, both local and international, which framed some of the arguments and some of the ideas that I developed in my creative work. And so I think the main bit of research that drove this novel, The Lebs, was coming out of the work of an anthropologist named Ghassan Haj, whose most famous book was actually his first one. It's called White Nation, Fantasies of White Supremacy in a Multicultural Society. And Ghassan, in that particular book, looks at how, if we want the broader social structure that kind of constructs Australia is based on a fantasy of whiteness. And so there's this imagined white facilitator who sees himself or herself as in charge of the nation, who comes in and who comes out, mm-hmm. and who decrees your degree of Australianness. And then in addition to that, Ghassan's work on specifically the Arab-Australian Muslim other. And he talks about two phenomenons. The first one, after 9/11, was that everyone on Earth who wasn't Muslim had developed some kind of sense of a Muslim threat. But different nations categorized that Muslim threat in different ways, with different language. And so in Britain, it was really the image of the Pakistani that embodied the entire Muslim threat. And in Germany, it was Turks who were the embodiment of the Muslim threat. And so what Ghassan Haj argued is that after 9/11, in Australia, we experienced that same kind of global Muslim threat, but we didn't articulate it just as Muslim. We used the term Lebanese as the language to be the embodiment or the metonym of the entire global Muslim threat. So we heard the word Lebanese being used a lot. We heard it being used interchangeably with Arab, Muslim, Middle Eastern. And in the case of the Cronulla riots, we saw the protesters rioting, but they were attacking Afghans. In some cases, they even attacked people who were Greek background. Mm-hmm. So the term Lebanese became a metaphor for this new type of other in Australia. And the second phenomenon that Ghassan talks about in relation to this identity called Leb or Lebanese is that it wasn't actually anything you would find in Lebanon. It's often talked about as a foreign menace. But if you actually looked at this group who we were describing as Leb, what you find is that they were a hybrid identity. There were types of Arabness that were built into them and types of Muslimness, but a type that came right out of Australia. It's not a kind of Arabness you would find in the Middle East, unless you met Arab Australians in the Middle East. And then also a type of Australianness that's common among all cultural groups, regardless of where you come from, including white people that have a type of Australianness that binds us all together. And then in addition to this, a kind of performance of African-American popular culture. Mm-hmm. And so Ghassan argues that all these three things, they come together and they created this totally brand new hybrid Australian identity called Leb. And that's what the Lebs is about. That's what my book is about. It's about these young men who are calling themselves Lebs in the post-9/11 era.
What was the most challenging part about writing this particular manuscript for you?
So the most challenging part for me as a creative writer is actually steeping my creative writing in some kind of intellectual framework. And so I was just explaining one element of my PhD thesis, which was the work of Ghassan Haj. Mm-hmm. But I spent 4 years looking very closely at the media, the literature, the films that represent Arabs and Muslims in a particular way, and then creating what I hoped would be an original contribution to that representation. And then also looking at literature that would inform not just the politics of my work, but the type of writing I wanted to produce. So I was heavily influenced, for example, by the autobiography of Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And I spent, you know, half a decade researching that particular autobiography and looking at some of the literary techniques that Malcolm X and Alex Haley had developed and thinking about whether they would work for an Arab-Australian autobiographical narrative. And so the reason why this is a really important point for me to make about research in terms of the challenge is because I think often creative writers and people who want to be creative writers talk about our craft in a very romantic way. You know, mm-hmm. we talk about staying up late at night and, you know, sitting under a tree and the idea of getting writer's block and having to take a long walk. And there's this kind of romantic notion of being this brilliant, beautiful mind who creates great literature. And I'd like to think that there is an element of that in my work, a type of uniqueness that each writer has, which makes their work special. But I also try to talk about the very pragmatic and very education-driven aspects of being a creative writer, which are very difficult. And in my case, that was 10 years of university education and study, which, you know, results ultimately in a PhD in this particular skill that I wanted to develop. And so that was certainly the most challenging aspect for me.
So with this hybrid identity, which you're talking about, which I find so utterly interesting, where do we go from there? Because there was this conflict between, you know, Lebanese Australians and Australians and this lack of understanding. And I'm sure you don't have the answer for me right here. It's very complex. But how do we move forward from that?
Well, I think the book, this particular book, is about the questions, and it's about setting up an opportunity to have the discussion. So certainly I haven't really given a lot of answers to those questions in the book itself. The actual purpose of the book for the narrator, who's an autobiographical version of myself, is to actually get to a point by the end where he has revealed that he has come to some kind of understanding which will help him think critically about these issues. And so I think there's a third book coming which will start to answer some of these questions. And really the point of the Lebs is to get us to a point where we are asking the questions that the narrator Bani Adam is asking. But to answer your question at face value, for me to try to answer the question of, you know, where are we and where do we go next? Look, part of the problem in the way we talked about the Leb in Australia in the years that the Lebs, my book is set, the years 1998 to 2004, and then the years following, is that we often constructed the identity of Lebs as a foreign menace. And this isn't unique to Lebs. We're seeing the same rhetoric being constructed around African communities at the moment in Melbourne. And we've seen a historical example in which minority groups are often depicted as a type of menace which is going to destroy the fabric of Australia, or to be more specific, the fabric of white Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the Lebs, actually just about 2 or 3 years before the book is set, it was the Vietnamese Australian community who was seen as that kind of menace.
Yeah.
And that was with the emergence of One Nation and with Pauline Hanson's maiden speech. And so we almost saw a shift between that demonization of Vietnamese Australian and more broadly Asian communities in Australia. And then that moved on to Arab and Muslim communities in the lead up to 9/11 and then, of course, after 9/11. And so often when we talk about these groups, we talk about them as this foreign group who are going to come into Australia and destroy the fabric of Australia. And what I try to argue in the Lebs is actually this is an Australian identity. It's not a foreign menace. It is a product of growing up in Australia. And with the probably the best example I can give of this is the incident concerning the SCAF gang rapes. So when in the year 2000 the gang rapes took place and there was a media frenzy around those gang rapes, what the language was referring to was these young men as a foreign menace or importing Lebanese and Muslim values that were destroying good, civilized, white Australian culture and values. And the reality, the sad reality of this is that actually Australia has a very dark history of gang rape and sexual assault, which is across cultural groups, including some of the most heinous crimes that have ever been committed in Australia in this particular issue, having been perpetrated by white men. And so I try to talk about how whatever the problem is, it's an Australian problem and we have to deal with it as an Australian problem. We have to stop trying to scapegoat it as a problem of ethnicity or culture or religion.
It was interesting how you talked about the others and how you said it was the Vietnamese Australians beforehand. And I remember growing up, I have an Indonesian background, and I remember my grandmother saying to me, oh, don't tell people you're Indonesian. So you're absolutely right that there's this sort of sense of this movement throughout our culture, and it leads to that kind of self-loathing, which Barney Adams, you know, has throughout. And I found him such a beautifully complex character, and he tries to separate himself from the others by being well-read and trying to dress differently. I loved the image of the beret. But beyond that, he has this deep self-loathing of who he is. And he says, I look like the gang rapist who's on the front page of every newspaper. And you say that he was, you know, written from your experiences. How much of him was you and how much was fiction?
Well, firstly, I would love to touch on the point that you made about being from an Indonesian background, because you might notice in the book that one of the most prominent characters
mm-hmm.
is a young man who identifies as being from an Indonesian background as well.
Yep.
And he calls himself a Leb. And so this is one of the primary points that I'm trying to make in the book, that the term Leb wasn't just shorthand for Lebanese. There was a huge subculture which had emerged in the western suburbs of Sydney, and it was calling itself Leb, but a lot of different minority groups were identifying that term. So now to answer your question about how much this is based on my reality and my real life, look, for the sake of, you know, being legally careful, I have to be really clear that this is a work of fiction. The characters are fictionalized and they're based on real life experiences, which I turned into composites for the purposes of literature. So I took a whole bunch of the experiences and a whole bunch of these people and created characters and incidents and events out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And also to touch on your point about who Barney Adam is in the book. So firstly, I'll make the observation that a lot of people, especially non-Arabic speaking people, miss that Barney Adam isn't actually a name in Arabic language.
Uh-huh.
It's a term. And the term means child of Adam or humankind, to be more metaphorical about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to write a complex human being. And so your point about how complicated Barney is, I appreciate, because, you know, when you read the book, what happens with this 14-year-old Arab-Australian Muslim male is he has quite contradictory thoughts frequently
yeah.
throughout the book. One moment he's speaking beautifully and eloquently and quoting the great works of the literary canon to empower himself. And then in the next sentence, he's thinking the same kind of misogynist, patriarchal, homophobic, racist way that his peers that he's trying to distance himself from. And so I think that is reality of being a human being, that we are three-dimensional. We have problematic thoughts and beautiful, complex thoughts simultaneously. We reinforce so many of the stereotypes and prejudices that are propagated about us, and at the same time, we subvert them from day to day. And so that's what I think is the essence of Bani Adam, this child of man or of humankind, that he is beautifully complex in his strengths and his weaknesses.
Yeah, and I loved that. I loved his naive infatuation with his teacher. And I love the quote, "No punchball boy would ever understand that I loved her, not because of her tits, but because our gazes met when Othello's words came out of her mouth." Like, there's so much. I think that sentence sums up exactly what you were saying, you know, that juxtaposition between the language and the beauty and all those different thoughts that goes on through his head. I thought that was a really nice description.
Well, the next thing Bani does, he quotes Othello because he's memorized all these great texts. So yeah. He says, "She had eyes and she chose me." and then actually he goes on to even paraphrase what Iago says by comparing himself to the Lebs and saying, "I am what I am." And so what I think is important with Bani is that juxtaposition, which reinforces the idea that he is a complete human being, mm-hmm. and is capable of the aspects of being a human being which make us a beautiful species, the most beautiful species on this planet, and at the same time, paradoxically, the worst creature on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's easier to conform some ways to the dominant culture which he's living in, but he still manages to push through. And what is it about his character that ensures that he does end up subverting, even though occasionally he does conform? And, you know, at one moment he says, "I abandon any aspirations to greatness and whiteness," which is also very sad, you know, that he has to aspire to that and not just be happy with who he is.
Well, I think the journey for Bani Adam and my journey since this is based on an autobiographical account, again, this is based on my life experiences, is that, growing up, I spent a lot of time hating myself, mm-hmm. and trying to escape and ultimately coming to some kind of sense of self-love, which was empowering. It's okay to be a Leb, was mm-hmm. the conclusion. And so I think that's the journey Bani's taking, that he's in an environment, I would argue, with reference to Gus and Haj's research, Bani's growing up in a white supremacist environment and in a white supremacist context, mm-hmm. Which not just demonizes the Arab Muslim other, but constructs whiteness as culturally superior. And so Bani internalizes that language that he sees in the media, that he sees in the films, and constructs a type of orientalist depiction of who we are as people from the Arab world. And what I would like to say is, because you asked me the question on how was it different for me, how did I firstly transform my situation, because Bani comes out of quite a hostile, violent, homophobic, misogynist, underclass group of young men. That's the context that he emerges from. Mm-hmm. And in contrast, he has nothing really to go to, because the other side of the world is saying to him, so one side of the world is something he doesn't want to be a part of, but the other side is saying, "You're not welcome here." And so how does he transform? I would like to think that it comes through some incredibly inspiring influences that Bani encounters in the book, and who these are people who are based on my real life that I encountered. And, you know, the character in The Lebs that is kind of the source of strength for Bani is named Bucky. For people who have been following my work and the work of the Western Sydney literacy movement for the last couple of years might know this, they might have picked this up, but Bucky is loosely based on my closest real-life friend, Peter Pilates. And Peter Pilates is also a well-known writer, and he's the author of a book called Down the Hume. And the narrator in Peter Pilates' book, who is also an autobiographical version of himself, is Bucky. So the Lebs is kind of a spin-off to Down the Hume by Peter Pilates, and Bucky makes a guest appearance in my book. And what happens is Bucky seems to know something as a Greek-Australian queer arts activist in Western Sydney. He seems to know something about the identity politics that are affecting Banny from day to day that Banny doesn't know. So Banny spends a lot of time trying to get that information out of Bucky, pursuing Bucky, actively chasing him around in order to extract some kind of secret that Bucky's withholding. And poking fun at, uses to poke fun at Banny's ignorance. And so what ultimately Bucky reveals to Banny is the beauty in calling yourself a Leb. And I think that that is my reality, that I was privileged enough and fortunate enough to encounter some really amazing, radical, critical thinking arts activists who are from minorities, who enabled me to reimagine myself when I looked in the mirror.
And it's interesting because ultimately he and you realizes that other perceptions should not define you. And there's so much sadness in the novel as well. I mean, you know, I know you've said people talk about all the confronting violence and the language, but I found so much sadness in it. And he says, I tried so hard to be an artist, to be white, to be one of them. And it must be so difficult to not only rise above your self-loathing, but then rise above what other people's perceptions are too.
So let's set up the context for this. In the last part of the story, so there's three parts. There's drug dealers and drive-bys, which looks at the kind of internalized violence and aggression within this high school that I went to called Punch Bowl Boys, which at the time was surrounded by barbed wires and cameras when I was studying there, and its nickname was Punch Bowl Prison. The second story is called Gang Rape, and it looks at the misogyny and the kind of the sexism and the patriarchy that was being enacted by the Lebs towards women, not just white women. I think it's really important to make that clear, because I think we often construct that discussion as, you know, men of color, you know, targeting white women because it tells them in their culture that and in their religions that they're allowed to do it, which is not true. That's a fiction. But generally speaking, the second story looks at the way Lebs engage with people from the opposite sex. And the last story, which is called War on Terror, is where things become, I think, the most subversive, because Banny exits out of that world, that Leb world, and enters into a white artist space. He goes to an arts organization and does a creative development with a group of white middle-class left-wing artists who have come from Sydney's inner west. And he wants to be just like them. But for the 3 days that he does this creative development with them, all they want him to do and all they want him to be and what they are pushing to be is a Lebanese Muslim stereotype, which they can bash so that they can feel better about themselves. So that's the context in which you made that quote, that by the end of the book, he's kind of grieving. He's saying, I spent all this time trying to be like them, but all they wanted me to be was this dirty Arab for their art. And that's a common experience, by the way. I should point out that for me, having written this book, most people of color who have now read it and who have been working in the art scene in Western Sydney for the last 15 or 20 years have told me, the way you articulate that experience of being pigeonholed and exploited by those white artists who came to make work about you was my experience. And so there is a sense of despair, but it's also my way of trying to have a discussion with white Australian artists and with white Australia in general about the processes, even the processes that are seen as progressive to working with people of color, which often leave us traumatized and brutalized and leave them empowered and, you know, ultimately with some kind of, you know, groundbreaking show that they use to take their career to the next level. Can I also point out that question of despair? The other term that's come up a couple of times now in our interview is confrontation, that this is a confronting book. And, you know, I go for that. I accept that. And it's definitely one of the main, not criticisms, though some people have used it as a criticism, but one of the main ways that we articulate the way you're going to experience the book. In fact, my publisher didn't shy away from it. It's on the back of the cover. It's a confronting book.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no problem with that term. But what I would say is this. I think reading as an activity that human beings in Australia get to do is a very privileged discourse. And most of the time we do reading, we conduct the activity of reading in a very safe context. So, you know, you're sitting on a train safely reading, or you're in your bed, it's night, and, you know, you're warm and you're comfortable and you're reading. Or, you know, you're sitting under a tree or you're in your office reading. And so the activity of reading, it's I would argue, historically, a privileged, safe space for us to be confronted and challenged. But I would say that as a mirror of my reality, being a Leb is a lot more confronting than reading about Lebs. And if anybody does feel very confronted by it, what I would like to say is that I want you to feel like you can be confronted and challenged while conducting this activity of reading the Lebs in a safe space. And also remember that whatever confrontation and whatever fear or offense you feel reading it, remember that this is my reality. And it was it's more confronting to be in that reality, to be in that situation, than to be reading about it. And so for that reason, it's something that I can never apologize for.
Mm-hmm. When I used the word confronting, it was never as a criticism. I just thought it was a really interesting way into the novel. And personally, I didn't feel offended at all. I've grown up in Western Sydney. I teach in Western Sydney. I found it a really honest book. And once you get beyond, you know, the language, etc., there's this sadness and authenticity and realism that, as you say, we don't hear enough. We don't hear enough voices from the Western suburbs. And I imagine that was how your idea emerged to become the director of the Sweatshop Western Sydney Literacy Movement.
Firstly, I would like to say thank you. I appreciate your kind words. And I believe you, you know, as a person from a minority who, you know, came from the Western suburbs of Sydney, that this book would have been something that you would be able to look at in a critical lens. And be able to kind of dissect and see, you know, the honesty coming through it. But now to talk about the underrepresentation of people from Western Sydney, I would argue that in Australian literature, maybe in the last 15 years, there's been a tremendous push to empower Western Sydney communities through writing. And one of the ways that that has come about is through more publishing of these Western Sydney voices. My concern, however, when I started this project, the Sweatshop project, was not just the underrepresentation of Western Sydney, but the underrepresentation of cultural and linguistic diversity. Because if you actually did the research and you looked at the writers who came out of the Western Sydney writing projects that were being conducted and who won literary awards and who got the book deals, the vast majority of them were white. And so the danger for me when we talk about Western Sydney is we were often talking about it interchangeably with diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And we were missing the fact that quite often when Western Sydney ended up being empowered, what was behind it was the fact that it was primarily white communities in Western Sydney who were being empowered and speaking for the rest of us. And so what we did at Sweatshop 2 years ago is we made it really clear in our language and in our policies that Sweatshop doesn't only support people from Western Sydney, but that we specifically support people from culturally and linguistically diverse and Indigenous backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And my reason for this is that if you're not talking about diversity, you're not talking about Western Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got to be off the table unless we are not using the term Western Sydney as an excuse to publish only white middle class books from people from Parramatta who moved into Parramatta 10 years ago, and that we're actually looking at the Indigenous communities, the Arab communities, the Asian communities, the African communities that have been here doing this kind of work since we were born and getting the kind of recognition we deserve as culturally diverse communities in the region who shape not just what happens in Western Sydney, but who shape what happens in Australia, because we are the largest population of Australians.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you, totally. And I think that's why when I read it, I just thought to myself, finally, something honest and something real and something kind of unsanitized.
Can I make the point there that, you know, in my case, and I imagine it would be very similar for the representation of communities that you identify with, that it's not just about the kind of representation, but who makes that representation. And overwhelmingly, the representation of Arab and Muslim communities, and this includes the representation of Arab and Muslim communities in Western Sydney literature, has been mainly controlled and depicted by white artists and white journalists and white politicians. And for me, the Lebs, even though in a lot of ways it reinforces the negative stereotypes about who we are, is an act of self-determination. It's me, an Arab Australian Muslim man, reclaiming that narrative that's been hijacked by a predominantly white arts community who speak quite often for us and about us. And my argument is really simple, that if you want to know us, if you want to know who I am, you have to come to me. You're not going to get that information from Peter Dutton, because all he's going to do is tell you that I'm a mistake, that I'm the mistake of Fraser letting my parents into the country.
This chat has honestly been so invaluable and really opened up my own understanding, and I hope other people's understandings of the book, because like you say, you know, you've had people's responses that are quite predictable, but you know, you need to go beyond that. And I think you've just brought up so many amazing points and incredible points that I hope deepens other people's understanding when they read it too. Because you're right, whenever you speak to someone about the Lebs, the first thing they come out with is, oh wow, you know, confronting, didn't expect it, all the language, but you need to go much deeper than that. And I'm so glad that you've been able to share all that with us today. It's been absolutely amazing. I can't wait to re-listen to this interview again, and I'll probably think of more questions for you later.
I would be honored to talk to you again at any time. And I also would like to say thank you and salamu alaikum to you, my sister, and to all the all the people who tune in and listen to this really stimulating discussion. I like to think that I can only speak as well as my interviewer. And so if we've had a really good discussion, it's because you asked the right questions.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for your time. It was really great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for reading the book and, you know, for appreciating it. It means a lot to me.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favorite authors.